Welcome to Exploring Security at the Intelligent Edge, a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Wind River. Wind River is accelerating digital transformation of critical infrastructure by delivering the technology and expertise that enable the deployment of safe, secure, and reliable IoT systems. To learn more about Wind River, visit windriver.com. I'm your host, Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today is Steve Hart, Director of Security Product Management at Wind River. Welcome, Steve. It's so great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Hillary. Really appreciate being here and looking forward to chatting with you today.
Yeah, me too. And to start off our chat, Steve, I'd love for you to share a bit about your security background as well as what you do as Director of Security Product Management at Wind River.
Sure. Yeah. So I have about 20 years of experience in cybersecurity. I started originally more in a development and engineering role, working on all kinds of security and encryption products and solutions for customers. Then I got more into architecture and design over the years. And in my most recent role here at Wind River, I'm focused on product management. So the product management role, a lot closer to customers, understanding their use cases, their needs, their pain points, so we can build them highly resilient and secure and safe products and solutions.
Awesome. Excellent. And in some prior podcasts with your colleagues, Paul Miller and Arlen Baker, we had some great conversations about security at the intelligent edge. So I'm curious to hear from you, Steve, what that means to you, and especially in that product management role you just kind of took us through.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, product management, again, is just very focused on customer use cases and requirements, making sure that we really nail those down and understand them correctly. So as a product manager, I'm responsible for clearly defining the what and the why around our products and capabilities and our solutions. So what security capabilities and features are we building into our products, and why are we doing that? Engineering is our partner, and engineering is really focused on the how. So they're focused on the technical details of the implementation. And so it's really important that product management works very closely with engineering to ensure that we have the full story of, you know, why are we building something and what exactly is that thing we're building? Does the implementation, make sense, and does it actually resonate into those use cases and the requirements, so that way we can achieve the capabilities and meet the requirements of our customers? And all this, especially in the security space, is, you know, has to be highly aligned with industry standards and guidelines, because, that's kind of how we can kind of help measure ourselves to ensure that we are achieving both security as a, security built into our products and specific security features and capabilities that our customers are asking for.
Excellent. And my next question for you, Steve, is, what is the difference between security for embedded products versus somewhere else, like a data center or server or something like that?
Sure, right. So when we think about embedded products or embedded systems, we have to think about the large number of devices where this software or these systems end up residing in or running in. Our products at Wind River are actually within over 2 billion devices around the world. So this distributed nature of these devices requires us to focus on securing communication to and from the devices. The devices are also much more accessible to a malicious user than perhaps access to a data center is. If you think of a malicious actor may able to very easily gain access, physical access to the devices that are running our software on them. Whereas a data center might have a number of other boundaries, physical boundaries, guards, gates, fences, that would prevent them from actually accessing the system. So we have to look at those different, it's really a very much different attack surface and different threat vectors that we have to think about when we're in securing either, an embedded system versus when you're trying to secure a data center.
Great. And it makes me think of, you know, why is it so important to understand your security position before you start your embedded design project? So I'd like to hear more from you on that.
Yeah, so you know, fixing problems gets more and more expensive the further you get within a software development life cycle. So if we think about your typical secure software development life cycle, starting with very early design and gathering requirements, building out an architecture, then developing, implementing code, testing, and then eventually getting to operations. The further to the right you get there, the more and more expensive it is to go fix the problem. You might have to redo some code. You might have to redo a design or an architecture. Those can be very, very costly. So it becomes really important that we think about security as early as possible when we're building out embedded systems. And it really starts with, you know, understanding the requirements, understanding, those use cases that our customers have. How do they intend to use these systems? What will be next to them? What will they be communicating with? What kind of risks or threats will be involved, depending on the placement of these systems and the distributed nature of these systems? So it's really important that we build security in and we shift left. We do security as early as possible in the overall development lifecycle of these solutions. And we're making sure that, we understand the risks and the threats that are involved around these embedded systems, and that we've taken those into consideration from the very beginning, built the proper set of security controls around the system, and then we've done enough testing and validation to ensure that those controls are operating properly, and they're providing the highest level of security posture to the embedded system.
And I guess to go a few steps further, as you're thinking through the start of a project, what do you think are the top considerations for implementing embedded security?
So, I think it's, it starts with understanding the attack surface. And, if we're thinking about infrastructure edge systems, these may be connected to a network, or they very likely are connected to a network. And we need to ensure all the network traffic coming to and from that system is encrypted in motion. And also that all the interfaces are hardened. So what I mean by that is, we need to understand the protocols that are being used across those interfaces, and we need to be doing really good input validation. If a malicious payload comes in, we need to be able to either identify that or automatically reject that, right? We don't want an attacker to be able to compromise any kind of interfaces that are available through an edge system. For devices, where physical access could be more easily achieved by an attacker, we might need to think more about the anti-tamper requirements, right? If an attacker gets hold of a device, we need to think about things like how the device can be booted and secure boot, right? We wouldn't want an attacker to be able to reboot the device using a malicious payload or a malicious bootloader that then allows them to compromise the modules within that device or get to the data that is being protected within that device. So we want to think about things like, anti-tamper capabilities. We want to think about secure boot for those devices. Then we want to also think about mandatory access control policies and things like secure loading of libraries and allow listing for applications. So how do we ensure that once we booted up that device, is the device only going to operate in the way that it was intended to operate? Can we ensure that it will only load libraries that that were intended to be running on that device, and that the applications that are running on that device can only get to data and to perform certain capabilities that it was originally intended to do when it was operationalized, right? All of these things can provide an overall defense in depth posture for a device. So that way, If a malicious actor was to try to get in, compromise an interface, or try to load malicious payloads onto that device, there's additional layers of defense and depth built in there to ensure that, you know, they cannot make lateral movement or they cannot elevate additional privileges on that device.
Excellent. And as far as, you know, having security be dynamic and having long life cycles, how do you fix or update software once it's in the field? I'm kind of thinking through that now as I'm hearing your responses to the previous questions. And I'm wondering, in addition to fixing or updating software once it's in the field, you know, where does that flexibility lie?
Sure. Yeah. So I think it starts with really having a need for a strong incident response program that supports continuous patching. You know, to your point, these systems are, you know, are very dynamic. There are a number of dependencies involved. It goes also back to supply chain security and making sure, you know, we have the appropriate level of patches available that can be applied to an embedded system to ensure it maintains a secure posture. And so when that system is ready to perform maintenance, the patches need to be available and the integrity of the patches need to be verified. So that way the patches themselves, you know, can be ensured that they're not providing now an additional threat vector for a malicious actor. So all this really depends on, you know, thorough testing of the patches and making sure that, you know, applying patches don't become disruptive to the embedded system or cause any kind of loss of availability, and being able to ensure that full supply chain that we know, you know, the integrity of the patches, we know where they're coming from, we know that they've been tested and they're not going to cause any, hardships to the device that we're trying to apply those patches to, and that the patches are really readily available again. So that way, when we're ready to apply maintenance for a device, the patching mechanisms they're available, they can apply it, and it's a seamless process through, you know, DevOps tool chains and pipeline management capabilities.
And Steve, there's a huge open source movement. How do software developers address the volume of vulnerabilities from open source?
Yeah, so I think that really speaks to the need for, you know, a full DevSecOps tool chain and really considering supply chain security. You know, a lot of, you know, open source comes upstream and there's a lot of activity going on there, but open source is not truly free, right? Once you start using open source, there is there's a need to maintain the patches and monitor, first and foremost, monitor the activity that's happening upstream and making sure that those patches are readily available as vulnerabilities are fixed, and that we've done the correct testing on a configuration or on a solution to ensure that applying those patches again don't become disruptive. So as open source becomes more and more pervasive, you know, across embedded systems, it really calls for really good security scanning and security testing. There's lots of different tools out there that will identify the provenance of, a bill of materials that may be available across an embedded system. It will identify any kind of vulnerabilities that are associated with those components. And then a lot of these tools also provide great recommendations on, you know, upgrade to a certain version of a library. But again, sometimes those upgrades could be disruptive. So that goes back to the security testing and testing in general of, you know, once we apply these patches for fixes to vulnerabilities, does the system still work correctly and provide us with a hardened posture for that overall embedded system? I would say also additionally, you know, it's going above and beyond just the known vulnerabilities to the unknown vulnerabilities. So you want to perform penetration testing or ethical hacking techniques. You don't want to wait for somebody to find vulnerabilities in software. If you can do extra validation testing around your system, you want to find those issues as soon as possible. So that way you can report them to the responsible parties for those open source components. And that will get you, you know, the quickest possible turnaround for getting fixes and patches that can be applied then to the embedded system. And then, you know, overall, it's really having a good review and update process for third-party components, right? We want to make sure that we're putting the best ingredients in our embedded systems. You don't want to just pull any open source project. You want to pull, you know, the best possible open source projects. So that way, you know, you're not, you're making good technology choices as well when you're building out these embedded systems and that, that are using components that are well supported by the open source community.
Excellent. I mean, Steve, you've given us a lot to think about so far, and there are so many facets to embedded security. But my last question for you is, how do you test cybersecurity for these embedded systems?
Sure. So I would say, you know, it starts with an architecture assessment. You know, as you're starting to gather the requirements and the use cases for an embedded system, and, you know, we start building these systems up, the architecture assessment focuses on, you know, did we actually build, you know, the system that we originally architected? Are the right controls there? Are the right components built into the system? And then making sure that, you know, threat modeling was done as part of that architecture process. So just like there can be implementation flaws or weaknesses in code, there can be flaws or weaknesses in architecture. So understanding the threats to an architecture and going through a threat modeling process to, you know, identify any weaknesses or, you know, points of where problems might come up in that architecture is really a key fundamental step in that process. After that, it's around enumerating through all of the interfaces, right? We need to identify any ports that are open. We need to understand the protocols that are being used and make sure we're always making good security choices there that align with industry best practices and standards and the most secure, you know, protocols that are available today. And then building out an attack library of abuse cases as part of the overall security testing suite. So, you know, ensuring that, you know, we're testing for security, whether it's, you know, running a scan to identify known vulnerabilities or, you know, trying a number of abuse cases that can try to, you know, see if they can penetrate an interface, right? See if, you know, if you send something unexpected to an interface, what does it do, right? Does it actually validate and reject unexpected or malicious content, or does it do some, does it start to cause the device to misbehave, right? If it, if the device starts doing unintended, you know, actions, then that's a problem that needs to be reported and needs to be resolved as quickly as possible. And then, you know, going back into once we've, you know, operationalized these systems and we're done with the testing and we believe we have, you know, a very high level of security assurance built within them, it's about making sure that the operations can only also support these devices. So, you know, that gets back to, you know, not only just being able to identify new issues that may arise from open source components that are associated or new attack techniques that have been, you know, publicized, but it's also being able to have the patches in hand, right, and timely. So that way, you know, as soon as those things are identified or the patches become available, we have a mechanism where we can apply those patches in a seamless way to the devices, and we can verify the integrity of those patches. So again, it doesn't provide yet another, you know, attack surface threat vector that a malicious actor could leverage against us.
Awesome. Well, that excellent answer to that question. And I know it was like kind of a loaded final question for you, Steve, but thank you so much for coming onto the show and having this conversation with me. It's been really interesting and I know our audience will really enjoy it. So just thank you for taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me today. It was fun chatting about this and, you know, just thanks again for having me as part of your show.
Yeah, of course. Our pleasure. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Exploring Security at the Intelligent Edge is brought to you by Wind River, who is delivering the technology and expertise that enable the deployment of safe, secure, and reliable IoT systems. To learn more about our sponsor, Wind River, visit windriver.com. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.